Dominique et Nick et Nick s'en allaient tout simplement. Routiers, pauvres et chantants. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, ils ne parlent que du bon Dieu. Ils ne parlent que du bon Dieu.
À l'époque où Jean Santerre d'Angleterre était le roi.
Remember the singing nun? Belgian sister Luc Gabriel, clad in a white Dominican habit, soared to number one on the hit parade with Dominique in 1963. And you thought only the Beatles made a statement with their collarless jackets. Hello, on the arc today, the remarkable staying power of the Catholic nun's habit. It's changed over the years, and many sisters in the West have ditched it. But it might be coming back. Elizabeth Koons has tracked the history of the habit from its origins in the second century.
It didn't look much different than some habits you might see on the street today. A very simple T-shaped tunic of rough cloth and a cincture or a belt, some sandals and a veil.
Well, Paul's letter to the Corinthians is pretty clear about the need to cover women. Is that where the idea of the veil of the habit comes from?
In part, it did. The veil was a form of clothing that married women wore in ancient times to signify that they were married. Jewish women, Roman women, it was the sign of a matron. So when Christianity came about and women, for the first time, lived as unmarried virgins for their whole lives, and that was an acceptable practice, they chose to wear the veil to show that they were, in fact, you know, not available for marriage. And they chose clothing that would separate them from the general population. And the clothing that they wore along with the veil was often very poor clothing. They wanted to identify with the poor.
Well, you point out in your study of the habit that it had various functions, and one of them is penance. Can you give some examples of how the nun's habit would act as a form of penance?
Sure. One good example would be the cincture, which is the term that religious used for the belt or the device that goes around the waist. Early habits often had a cincture that was designed to remind the wearer of Christ and being bound. And they would pull their cinctures tight to sort of be uncomfortable as a form of penance to sort of identify with Christ's sufferings. So that would be one example. The rough cloth was very uncomfortable, and it also was penitential nature, simply due to the fact that people wore much finer clothing if they could afford it. So to choose a rough cloth would have been a sacrifice.
Well, sometimes the desire for penance conflicted with the holy requirement for cleanliness. I think you cite the example of St. Margaret of Hungary, who wore clothes that were lice-ridden.
Yes, that's true. And a lot of the rules of female religious, particularly the early rules, but even there are rules even today, a lot of them talk about laundering and specifically forbid excessive cleanliness and excessive laundering. And the reason for that is to take the wearer away from the idea of worrying so much about temporal matters and worrying about feeling good and looking good. And, you know, the emphasis on not washing as thoroughly as you would like is, it's uncomfortable. So, your question asking about contrasting that with requirements for cleanliness.
Yes, I mean, it's quite interesting. There seems to be a conflict there between the desire to be pure and clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. It's an odd contrast. I mean, I can understand, as I'm sure you can, the idea of keeping one's mind off of the things of the world as being part of what the religious life is all about. But then, as you point out, the idea of being pure does seem to contrast with that.
One of the most interesting functions of the habit was its role as an aide-mémoire, an assembly of signs and symbols of the creed. You mentioned before the T-shaped tunic, which might have been a kind of symbol of the cross. Getting dressed in the habit could be something like an extended prayer. Can you give some idea of the items of the habit which had symbolic value?
Oh, absolutely. Most religious orders had a very complex procedure for dressing that involved prayers around each piece of the habit, putting on the veil. If the veil had a pointed top, you know, perhaps the prayer would be something about looking upwards to God and remembering, you know, to keep one's thoughts on holy matters. The cincture, wrapping that around and remembering the binding of Christ during his passion. Putting on the sandals without socks, remembering that the simplicity and the poverty of one's vocation. The T-shaped tunic absolutely was a certainly important symbol of the Christian church. But, I mean, even things as detailed as sevenfold in the dress of an order representing the seven wounds of Christ, or the bandeau, which is the white linen piece that goes across the forehead, reminiscent of the crown of thorns of Christ. There could be very, very detailed symbolism in these habits.
Elizabeth, which habit impressed you as one of the most interesting ones that you came across?
There's no question that I was most moved by the habit of Mother Teresa of Calcutta. It's obviously a very distinctive habit that I would say most of us would recognize, the missionaries of charity wearing the white Indian-style sari with the blue stripes. In fact, Mother Teresa took the cloth of the people around her, the white, poor cloth that most of the people she served wore, and she took the form of the dress around her, which was a kind of a radical thing at that time. In the 1950s, most religious women were wearing the very classic black and white forms that we all recognize and know. And she decided to do something really that reflected the people that she served. But she also combined that with very distinct symbols, like the blue stripes, which represented to her the Virgin Mary, the Blessed Virgin Mary. So that habit, I think, is really kind of remarkable thing in the history of the habit.
I gather that's very different from the now popular 12th century Hildegard von Bingen. She had quite lavish tastes, didn't she?
She did. In Hildegard's case, she really thought that the religious women that, that lived with her should be dressed very beautifully and lavishly. As a sign of their love for Christ, she thought, why deny God any beauty that we could possibly give him? So you're right, she had white silk, beautiful dresses made for her nuns, and they wore loose, long hair, and they had very elaborate golden headpieces. Typically, they would wear those types of costumes during feast days and special celebrations, but not only her order, but others wore much more beautiful and colorful clothing.
Elizabeth, it's the headpieces that really interest me. On the front cover of your book is a nun who's wearing a headpiece that looks like a folded paper airplane. She yeah. looks like she's about to take off.
Exactly. And you may not be familiar in Australia with the show The Flying Nun, which was a big hit in the 1960s here in the U.S. Sally Field was the star. But that's exactly the headdress style that she wore. And you're right, it gives the impression that she could take flight at any moment. That particular image of the flying nun is actually based on the Daughters of Charity. They were formed by St. Vincent de Paul in France in the 17th century. And in fact, that strange hat was a takeoff of the country peasant girl's actual working costume, her working hat.
Elizabeth, the Reformation came and changes started to happen. Mary Ward in England founded a teaching order, and I think that was something of a turning point for the habit.
It was. Habits changed at that point because we suddenly had two different types of religious women, where in the past we'd simply had monastic orders, meaning women who lived in cloister and who professed solemn vows and wore a monastic distinct habit. With the 16th century changes that the Jesuits began, orders became visible out in the world, and they didn't choose to look like nuns. They wore dresses, they wore the clothes of country people or widows or just very simple, somber types of clothing.
Well, America was seen as something of a hostile environment to Catholic nuns at first, but Abraham Lincoln had some nice words to say about Catholic nurses.
He did. There were many orders of women religious who served as nurses in the American Civil War. And President Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, did, in fact, you're right, write a beautiful tribute to them. And there is a beautiful monument in Washington, D.C., which has some of his words engraved in the bronze, as well as a representation of the habits of each of the orders who did serve as nurses.
Well, Elizabeth, we leap to the last 50 years or so, and there's been a revolution in the nun's dress. Did it go from being a holy habit to a uniform?
It changed dramatically in the 1950s for most orders, although the habit has always been something that has been revised and revisited by orders. In some cases, you could say that it became a uniform and lost some of its kind of sacred nature, but that would be an exception. It looked more like, you know, a nurse's uniform or a stewardess's uniform is something that a lot of people refer to it as.
Well, Christian Dior designed one, didn't he?
Yes. In fact, when the changes started to happen en masse, Pope Pius XII demanded in 1951 of sisters worldwide that they must take a look at their habit and simplify and update. Orders did decide, okay, we're going to redesign our habits, and Christian Dior was asked to come up with a design for the Daughters of Charity, which is the group that we were speaking about earlier in France. They came up with something that had box pleats, and it was called the box pleat habit, and it was utilized for a while. And keep in mind, at that point, there were something like 45,000 members of that one particular order worldwide. So, you know, it was a large, costly decision-making process to change everyone's clothing.
Elizabeth, the number of women religious have decreased dramatically in the last 40 years. I think you quote from 180,000 in 1965 in the U.S. to 80,000 40 years later. Has the habit had something to do with that? I mean, is there a renewal of interest in the habit?
There are a lot of people, a lot of Catholics, in the laity and in the clergy and among women religious who look directly to the habit and the loss of the habit and say this has something to do with the decline of women religious, the decline in numbers. A lot of others will say, well, this represents something that happened. I couldn't say how the habit relates to that. The second part of your question, however, is interesting because the numbers of women religious in formation now are higher among orders who wear the habit. And young people today are very interested in the habit, both women religious and male religious. One could look at that and, looking at today's numbers, certainly say, well, it has an appeal that's significant.
It's a hard habit to kick. Elizabeth Koons was speaking to me from Syracuse, New York, and she's the author of The Habit, A History of the Clothing of Catholic Nuns.